welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Happy Halloween, everybody. It's Saturday evening, October 31st. Halloween it is, yet we're still here working, as always, on AM 1380 WLRM. I'm James Edwards. You're in the political cesspool. I just mentioned we're broadcasting live from our flagship station here in Memphis, Tennessee this evening, but also, as always, going out to our affiliate stations, courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network, our internet stream at thepoliticalcesspool.org, and via satellite as well. Thank you for tuning in tonight on Halloween. Hopefully, you've got us tuned in as you're driving around, taking your kids out trick-or-treating. That would be horrifying enough for most children, and yet we're just getting started. Welcome again to the show. Another special program tonight. Last week was our anniversary. We celebrated 5 years on the air, and tonight we're back again, and it just so happens that this broadcast falls on the night of Halloween itself, but we're just as happy to be here as we ever were. And joining me now as we head into what is officially our sixth year of broadcasting, my good friend and compatriot, Keith Alexander. Keith, happy Halloween to you.
Happy Halloween. I thought you'd be out haunting a house tonight.
Well, you know, I'm going to the haunted house after the broadcast, and we're going to see what kind of trouble we can get into. Halloween was always, and I mean always, I guess everybody has to say obligatorily, Christmas is their favorite holiday, and obviously Christmas is Christmas, and it's second to none. But other than that, I guess, Halloween, always the most fun holiday I had growing up as a kid. It was always the time of year I looked most forward to. It was kind of a night, obviously a fun night, but it also shepherded in the rest of the so-called holiday season and nice cool weather here in the Mid-South. So this is always a special time of year for me, even though now I'm approaching 30 years old. It still carries some special significance. So we're going to get into all of that after the show tonight, but first, work must intrude, and that's why we're here this evening. I mentioned, Keith, a very good broadcast last week. For the last 2 hours, we recounted behind-the-scenes stories and reflected upon some of the guests we've had and some of the other things that have gone down in our 5 years of radio history here in the political cesspool, as, of course, we turned 5 years old on October 26th. But also during that show, during the first hour, we had an absolutely riveting and enthralling interview. It was a dual interview that featured Richard Spencer, the managing editor of Talkie Magazine, and then Dr. Paul Gottfried, professor at Elizabethtown College. And Keith, I think, in essence, as you heard that broadcast in the archives last week, you wanted to revisit it, sort of, and offer your perspective on it, which, in a manner of speaking, extends the interview just a little bit. But it was a great interview, and I know you wanted to add to it.
Well, it was a great interview. I'm sorry I had to miss it because I had two of our favorite guests on there, Richard Spencer and Paul Gottfried. And they were talking about a topic that I think is particularly timely right now, particularly since the left is busy shooting itself in the foot and inflicting wounds upon themselves. The question always comes up, well, then this is a perfect opportunity for the conservatives to steal a march on them and to gain power, right? Well, wrong. Usually what happens is that the opportunity is squandered, just like it was in 1994 when all of these Republicans, supposedly conservatives, got elected into office and promptly did absolutely nothing to advance the cause of conservatism with all the power that they had just won.
Well, they did less than nothing, and upon their election and their ascendancy into power, all of the true conservatives that elected them into office completely retreated from the battlefield, and thus you had irresponsible Republican spending in government, and then, of course, the absolute annihilation, which always happens when you take away your flank.
Well, I don't think that they got retreated and got away, the true conservatives, so much as they were pushed out of the trough by the likes of the neoconservatives and people that are just rank opportunists like Newt Gingrich, for example. That's the one person who comes to mind in that 1994 counter-revolution of the Republicans, supposedly, is Newt Gingrich, and what a sorry spectacle of a sorry specimen of a standard bearer for conservative conservatism.
And continuing his legacy of sorriness, he just endorsed a very liberal Republican up in New York.
Yeah, absolutely. And see, the whole point is, conservatism seems to be feckless, in other words, totally ineffective. And why is conservatism feckless? This was what the conversation between you and Richard Spencer and Paul Gottfried was focusing on, at least for part of the time last Saturday night. And the conclusion that Gottfried and Spencer and you came up with is that basically conservatives, at least mainstream conservatives, tend to have this innate need for validation from their liberal enemies. And, of course, their liberal enemies are never going to validate them, and that's more a reflection on the liberal enemies than it is on the conservatives, because these people, liberals, are liberalism is the modern face of evil. These are bad people. They're not about to validate anything that we say, and by having people like, let's say, Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity trying to assure their adversaries in a debate that they support affirmative action, that they are they firmly believe that slavery was the cause of the Civil War, and making all of these concessions, it never gains them anything. Sam Francis, the late and much lamented and much needed today, Sam Francis, who died in February of 05, said that you can't win a debate by conceding your adversary's major premise, and the major premise that all of these things relate to is the civil rights movement. Basically, what the left does, whenever they, it's like children playing tag. Whenever a child is playing tag and he gets in jeopardy, he runs back to home base where he's safe. And home base, for the liberals of today who are getting into deep water with the public about Obamacare and about cap and trade and about other things, you'll notice, at least I've noticed, in the local newspaper, the Commercial Appeal here in Memphis, I'm seeing this resurgence of articles trying to dredge up and, you know, stir the dying embers of the civil rights movement. There's one in the newspaper today about Emmett Till and about some little exhibit that's going on in Hernando, Mississippi, in some little free museum they have down there. And in the local section of the newspaper, it takes up three columns and has two large photographs in it. Meanwhile, in one column, with no large photographs, is an article about the actual jury verdict that was rendered yesterday in the what they call the Knoxville Horror, the Shannon Christian and Christopher Newsom murders in Knoxville, where a gang of black creditors, and of course the leader had to come from you-know-where, Memphis, that's where he grew up, was convicted and sentenced to death. Now, that new murder, horrific as it was, is reduced to one column, while Emmett Till, who died in 1955, has a feature article with colored photographs and three columns. And the reason is the left keeps wanting to revisit the civil rights movement, and they certainly don't want to even visit for the first time a situation that is current, which shows that white people like Shannon Christian and Christopher Newsom are being victimized and tortured and killed by blacks. They want to, you know, revisit this old schmaltzy civil rights thing where, you know, white southern redneck predators are coming after poor, innocent, saintly black people all the time. And they do that because that's their safe place. That's the place where they are safest.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And by the way, you mentioned the Channing Christian Christopher Newsom murder. I had the opportunity to provide commentary about that grisly event on CNN, and the footage of that is still available on our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. But in talking with you a couple of days ago in preparation for this segment, you brought that up about how the left seemingly retreats to their home base of the so-called civil rights movement to absolve themselves of any responsibility for the failed ideas and policies they try to force down the unwilling throat of the American electorate. And that's exactly what they do. Whenever they get in hot water over an issue that is bad for this country, they basically regurgitate that they are the ones who championed the so-called civil rights movement. Therefore, they are righteous, we are evil, they're absolved from any sort of, as I say again, responsibility for bad ideas, and they're the good guys. Basically, that's what we're...
That's the whole purpose. Just remember, folks, we're the good guys. We're the people that were on the side of the poor and defenseless and the righteous folks in the civil rights movement, and the conservatives, on the other hand, they were backing these bad folks. So never forget that. That's just exactly, you know, that's the sum and substance of it.
Keith, we've got 10 seconds to break, but of course it goes without saying, for anyone who does know true history, the exact opposite is true. We were the righteous ones. We were taking the right stands. They were the ones who perverted something and made it very evil. And so we're going to pick it up right there when we come back. Stay tuned, everybody. The Political Cesspool Halloween edition is just getting started. Keith and I will be back right after this.
Coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show. I am James Edwards. It is Halloween night and a beautiful Saturday evening, October 31st it is. It's been a very damp and dreary week in Memphis. Lots of rain. I think we had a 1,000-mile storm front come through yesterday. I've never seen it rain so much, but it's a beautiful, clear, cool Halloween night, and I'm looking forward to enjoying it when we get off air this evening. And if you want to treat the political cesspool this Halloween, by all means, don't trick us. But if you want to treat us, you can go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. And keep in mind that we are listener-supported programs. If you want to treat us, make a donation. We would certainly prefer that over the bad candy that we all got when we went trick-or-treating. But returning back to the program now and continuing on where we let off before the last commercial break, I want to be very, very frank with you right now, and I want to speak as openly, as honestly, as candidly as I can. Look, back in the paper, Keith was talking, there was an article in the paper today about Emmett Till, who died 55 years ago, as if that's contemporary news. Earlier in the week, there was a picture so big it covered the front and bottom below the fold of the entire front page of the paper, above and below the fold, huge picture of Medgar Evers. Now, Medgar Evers, another one of these so-called civil rights icons who was killed, apparently, back in the 50s. Now, we here in the political cesspool, we eschew violence. We have no tolerance for violence or anyone advocating illegal activities. I don't like to see liberal blacks murdered. I don't like to see conservative whites murdered. I don't like to see anybody murdered or be the victim of any malfeasance. But with that being said, Medgar Evers was not a hero of mine. I do not want to read about Medgar Evers 60 years after the fact, specifically and especially because in reading about him, I am reminded about how evil my ancestors were, how supposedly evil my ancestors were, and how bigoted and racist my ancestors were. And they used the memories of these dead civil rights people to reinforce the fact that we were wrong and we have to, you know, repent for these sins. But, you know, we never can. If you ask them, there is no debt that we can pay that would be great enough to absolve ourselves of the sins that we, well, didn't commit in the first place. But the fact is, 60 years after this man died, it's not front page news. All right. There's one reason and one reason alone that they keep regurgitating these old stories. I mean, how many European Americans are murdered every single day by the product of this diversity that we're all supposed to be working for? How many European Americans don't live tonight in America, like Chan and Kristen and Christopher Newsom? How many European Americans have been the victim of murder that resulted from this multicultural experiment that failed back then just as sure as it's failed today? But there's one reason and one reason alone that Emmett Till and Medgar Evers are still in the news, Keith, and what reason is that?
That's to inflict guilt upon whites and basically to turn white red state Americans, and in particular white Southerners, into kulaks. In other words, like the kulaks were the class of people in the Bolshevik Revolution that were hounded and harried and supposedly guilty of all of these sins, and they were sent out to the gulags to perish doing work in sub-freezing temperatures out in Siberia. That's basically what they would have in mind for us. They, you know, they keep reviling our ancestors. And like you said, there's no way that this supposed debt that they've invented for us could be paid. The only way that we would repay it is for us to die, and after making a will where we leave everything to our ancestors. Not to our ancestors, excuse me, to the minority group members that were supposedly oppressed by our ancestors.
And they would take that inheritance and still, you know, micturate on our grave. I think I can use that word on the radio. Anyway, Keith, but you're exactly right. Now, there was a quote in the paper today about Emmett Till. What did it have to say?
Well, it's from this fellow named Gerald Chatham, whose father prosecuted the murderers of Emmett Till. And, of course, Emmett Till is one person, and here's what it says. This is what this guy said. See, since his father was trying to prosecute him, then he gets at least a conditional pass, even though he's a Southern white man, as a good guy. And, of course, just like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and Bill O'Reilly, and just like Paul Gottfried, you and Richard Spencer were saying, he has to extend the olive branch of understanding and conciliation to his enemies, or our enemies. Here's what he says. It is a story that had to be told, he said. It is history. We don't need to forget about Emmett Till, Pearl Harbor, the Civil War, or any aspect of our history. All these stories need to be told. Well, at least he's standing up to say that the Civil War is a story that needs to be told.
Unfortunately, when Pearl Harbor is told, it's told backwards, but nevertheless.
But nonetheless, you see, can you imagine Emmett Till's murder comparing with Pearl Harbor, which got us into World War II, or the Civil War, which basically is still affecting American lives and Americans' perceptions of reality today. Emmett Till is, you know, one person, a manufactured situation. And, of course, they keep emphasizing how evil the people that killed Emmett Till were. Well, if they were evil, they killed one person. Then, as we mentioned 2 weeks ago on this show, why isn't Menachem Begin 91 times as evil as they, since Menachem Begin was responsible for killing 91 innocent people in the King David Hotel bombing in Jerusalem in 1948? Also, why isn't Nelson Mandela 16 times as bad as these people? Because he was responsible for the bombing of a train station in South Africa during the anti-apartheid movement as the head of the ANC, the African National Congress, that resulted in 16 deaths.
And
so
I wonder,
why isn't he 16 times as bad? He's a hero. Menachem Begin's a hero. But these people are the most triple-dyed villains ever to draw breath.
And I wonder, Keith, if this commentator would argue that the subhumans who raped, dismembered, burned, murdered Shannon Christen and Christopher Newsom, are they also as important? Is their story also as important, or is the loss of Newsom and Christian also as important as, you know, the bombing of Pearl Harbor? I wonder to him if that would be the case.
Yeah,
too.
And I wonder if 55 years from today, there's going to be an article that takes up three columns, three quarters of a page of a newspaper, and has a banner headline revisiting the murders of Shannon Christian and Christopher Newsom.
And again,
let me tell you, don't hold your breath.
If you're having a hard time remembering who Shannon Christian and Christopher Newsom were, and you wouldn't be at fault if you didn't know who they were, I did have the opportunity to talk about that on CNN. You should take a look at it at thepoliticalcesspool.org. It's a story, unfortunately, that repeats itself every day in America. This is what diversity has gotten us, because why? You can't have a first world nation with a third world population, and that's what we've got now, and these are the things that we have to live with. But
yeah,
Keith,
well,
let's just tell
people very briefly what Shannon Christian and Christopher Newsom were. They were a young couple,
white couple,
attending the University of Tennessee, a white young couple that were, without any provocation, attacked, kidnapped, raped. They had certain parts of their bodies dismembered. They had cleaning fluid and lye, things like this, poured down their mouths. And they raped the woman. They killed the man.
They
tried to burn
too.
His body, put it on some railroad tracks. And then they were both killed by a predatory gang of about five black men.
Well, and there was one black woman in that gang also. But
okay.
But again, you know, it goes without saying. Will the deaths, will their deaths be remembered in the same way as Till or Medgar Evers? Not a chance. Because let's face it, they're not part of the politically correct crowd, and they weren't part of the civil rights movement. So therefore, their deaths mean nothing. And in fact, we're racist for even talking about their deaths because the assailants were non-white. But we got to take a break there. When we're going to come back, Keith is going to set the record straight on who was right in the civil rights era, who was wrong, and we're going to lay it out for you. No holds barred, uncensored, as we always do here on the Political Cesspool. You're going to want to stay tuned. Much more to come right after this.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
There's Big Girls Don't Cry by Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, which leads me to tell you, Keith, we're going to have to go to this. Are you going to go see Jersey Boys when it comes to the Orpheum? We got to
make
that.
I've got to go. You've talked up the Four Seasons so much, and quite frankly, I've developed a renewed interest in them, and you know, I have to admit their music was pleasant. It was good, and I got to see it now.
Well, there you
James
go.
James has converted me.
Yeah, I've seen Frankie so many times in concert. We've actually even had one of the original founding members of the Four Seasons on this show. And anyway, it's the top show on Broadway up in New York for several years now. It's a Tony-winning musical. It's going to be here at the Orpheum in Memphis. So, Keith, we're going to plan that out. Anyway, welcome back to the show here. Look, if you are a European American in the year 2009, as you sit here listening to this broadcast on Halloween, you are sure of three things if you read the establishment paper or if you turn on a television. None of these three things are true, of course, but nevertheless, this is the perception that you are being force-fed. You are responsible for three things and three things only: the genocide of Native Americans, slavery, and European colonialism. All which we are taught are inherently evil. Now, I'm not going to get into debating that. We know it's all bunk, but that's what we're all taught. And a lot of people who don't have reinforcement from shows like this are led to believe that we are guilty of these things and that we are the ultimate evil, and therefore we have this great guilt complex, and we spend our whole lives working for the very people who are trying to displace us. Keith, that being said, you have another take on this perceived guilt and the sins that have been attributed to our people.
Well, let's just look at it. Step back from the forest, see the trees, and imagine life in the antebellum South. Our ancestors had slavery thrust upon them. That is, most of our ancestors. Most of our ancestors, most people that live in the South or the West in Red State America today, and of course, the West was primarily settled by Southerners, so that's why I throw them into the mix. They were not in charge of determining what the institutions and the style of life was going to be in their community. This was set by the elites. And slavery was just, to then, was just like illegal immigration today. Both illegal immigration and slavery were devices by which the elite, a small group of elites at the top of society, determined they were going to get cheap labor. Slaves were cheap labor, just like today illegal immigrants are cheap labor. And even though the vast majority of people today that are native-born citizens of America would like illegal immigration to end, I think it was 80% when they polled people back in the waning years of the Bush administration, the elites have such a stranglehold on power that nothing's done to stop illegal immigration. Likewise for slavery. What was the result of slavery? What was the average consequence on the day-to-day life of the average Southern white worker by having slaves in their midst? Well, it's quite obvious what it was. They were basically used to do work at cheaper wages, and if white workers ever thought about collectively bargaining or getting together and saying, "We want to be paid better. We want better benefits." The group, the elite group in charge, their bosses would say, "Don't you even think about taking a step down that road, because if you do, we're going to replace you with this group of strike breakers, this group of scabs called the black population. This is both in slavery and in the post-slavery era. That's why unions, labor unions, never could get a foothold in the South. That's why Henry Ford, who hated unions and admired the fact that the South didn't have them, started to import black workers up to Michigan in the North in the 30s and 40s so he could play that same game with the workers in Michigan, Illinois, Ohio, wherever. And it works like a charm for Henry Ford. It does today. So, in other words, where's the benefit? You know, I think it's Pat Buchanan who said, cui bono, for whose benefit? For whose benefit was slavery? Not for the average white person, not for 95% or even probably 99% of the white population of the South. It was for the benefit of a small group of elites. Always has and always will be that way, won't it, James?
And I think at every creed on the face of the planet has at some point been enslaved by another. It was just the way of the world. But
everybody has an ancestor that was a slave. In fact, the term Slavs for like Yugoslavia, the people in Southeastern Europe, is derived from the word slaves. They were slaves. The Ottoman Empire, the Islamic Empire that governed the Mediterranean area, except for the European part of it, for most of 500 years, got their slaves from two places, Europe and Africa.
Yeah, and you know, Keith, that's exactly right. And it also should be mentioned, and we did in the break, that slavery was the humane alternative, which is why the Europeans practiced it rather than the flat-out genocide, which is the way of the world it was in Africa.
Well, it's the way it was almost all over the world. There was an age-old problem in the ancient world of what to do with the conquered people, and slavery was a humane alternative. The other alternative was to put them to the sword. Now, in the ancient world, nobody thought, well, we're just going to extend the hand of brotherhood and turn these people into our equals and give them all the advantages of being a citizen of Rome, for example, when Rome was in charge.
Yeah, and you saw what happened to Rome. If we're going to behave like the new Rome, we're going to pay the price that Rome paid.
Well, Rome eventually did start extending citizenship, and as Edward Gibbon in his Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire said, Rome wasn't defeated by barbarians from without so much as it was defeated by barbarians within.
You know, you can learn a lot from antiquity, Keith.
Absolutely.
And it certainly repeats itself, and it's repeating itself now in America. It just took a little while.
Well, that's what's going to happen. And see, if that's the case, where does all this guilt come from? Guilt is being used as a weapon against the founding stock of America to weaken us and to make us participate and acquiesce in our own dispossession from our own land. And that's the whole purpose for it. That's why you're reading this. And, for example, at this present time, when the Obama administration and the leftists in it are trying to force socialized medicine on America, they're trying to enforce cap and trade so that we can't exploit and use our own natural resources, like oil and coal, for our own benefit. When that happens and the left starts to get a black eye, out they come with all these civil rights era stories to regale us with.
But I think we have failed to mention the most important statement that we can make during this segment is that, yes, they are trying and they will continue to try, and unfortunately they're greatly effective, to make us feel guilty, and they will retreat to that base that you mentioned earlier in the program, Keith, which is the civil rights movement, and they'll bring up front page pictures of Medgar Evers reminding us that he was killed. And they're the good guys. And if we're not on team with the good guys, we must be part of the bad guys. But what we have failed to mention on this show is that we were right. We were right in the 1950s and 1960s about what would happen if all of this liberal policy was implemented. We were right. They were wrong. There was nothing, nothing immoral or dishonest or sinful about the stand that people Lester Maddox and George Wallace took. Lester Maddox and George Wallace were right. They were only too right, and that was their greatest sin. They were too right.
And you know why, James? We know that because that's what the left does. The left doesn't believe in integration. Lester Maddox, George Wallace, and other Southerners were believed in segregation. And look at the lives that they lead. Did Teddy Kennedy or the Kennedy's children attend integrated public schools?
No, they didn't.
They went to segregated private schools. They live in segregated private exclusive communities, oftentimes gated communities.
Yeah, Chelsea Clinton didn't go to the inner city Washington, D.C. schools, but you know, and that's why this should always fail. It should always fail because we did nothing wrong. You know, the only reason it's able to succeed is that people have bought into the lie that we were wrong back then. If we would just man up and step forward and say, you know what, we were right. What do we have to feel guilty about? You're dead gum right. We took these stands back then. But they'll always go to the extreme and bring up some obscure murder case.
And it's time to tell these liberal hypocrites like Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, and all these other people who make sure that their children are shielded from the effects of integration, they are hypocrites.
Got to take a break. We'll be back with more right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to our live Halloween edition of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It is Saturday, October 31st, 2009, Halloween night. And we're here with James Edwards and Keith Alexander. Now, for the last several years I think this is not the first time we've actually been in studio on a Halloween night, but nevertheless, every program, either on Halloween or as near to Halloween as we can get it, we present to you a radio program on Halloween that specifically talks about Halloween itself, the origins of Halloween. It's such a unique and holy European tradition, Halloween is. We're not going to have the time to do that tonight. We're going to be talking about more contemporary issues. I think we clowned around enough last week during the birthday party anniversary special. But if you want to go back to our program last year, I seem to remember that it was the Bombardier Eddie Miller and myself here in studio last year. And we did, I think, a full hour on the origins of Halloween, some of the cultural aspects of Halloween. It's a very good show. So if you want to go back to the broadcast archives at thepoliticalcesspool.org, go back to last year's Halloween show. Very, very good festive Halloween edition of the Political Cesspool. And even though we're on in Halloween tonight, we're not going to be talking about it as much because we just don't have time.
There's a very good article on it, too, at Western World Voices that is run by our friend Frank Roman.
That's right, WVWnews.net, Western Voices World News. Yeah, they always have a very good Halloween selection, a couple of articles there. I think they enjoy the European aspect of the holiday as much as I do, and good stuff there, Western Voices World News. Thanks for pointing that out, Keith. In the last segment, the entire first hour this evening, we've been talking about the guilt complex that is pushed into our psyche. We are taught that our people have committed all the sins that have ever been committed in the world, that our people are the root of all evil. And it's not just stuff that they can throw up that would be almost understandable when they're talking about a murder of a black guy or, some sort of violation of someone that took place during the civil rights era. They will use anything and everything to make us feel responsible for everything. They will even use the most absurd and bizarre examples of black neglect to make you feel that you are responsible for their shortcomings. The most egregious example that I've ever seen in my life came just this week here in the city of Memphis, Tennessee. And we don't normally talk a lot about Memphis news on this program because we are a national, if not international, broadcast here in the political cesspool. We're based in Memphis, but Memphis news normally isn't big enough to make our show. But this story was, and I'm going to talk more about it during the second hour, go into a little more detail, but the nutshell version of it is this. In Memphis this week, a black woman and her sister left two toddlers, ages 3 and 2, in the home unattended while they went out on a shopping trip. When they got back to the house had burned down and the two toddlers had died, or one had died, the other one hadn't quite died yet, but he passed away shortly thereafter. Horrible incident, to be sure. The aunt was interviewed, and this is on our website, by the way. You're going to think I'm making this up or exaggerating this. Go to thepoliticalcesspool.org.
We've got the tape, folks.
Yeah, we've got the Eyewitness News, Channel 5, the NBC affiliate here in Memphis, Channel 5 News, Action News 5. Go down to our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. You're going to think I'm exaggerating this story to make a point. You got to see the footage. I'm telling you exactly the way it is. The aunt and the mother come back home. The house is on fire. The kids are dead. They interview the aunt to get her reaction, to ask her why she left the two toddlers in there unattended. And she said, and I quote, "I would have done it again," basically, "that I had no idea when we left them there that they were going to burn the house down. But what I'm most concerned about is that my welfare card was in there, and I hope it didn't burn up too." And she laughed as she said it. This is their aunt. Now, from that, we go to the newspaper this week here in Memphis, the Commercial Appeal. And Wendy C. Thomas, who is the resident black commentator here for the Commercial Appeal, she's attacked us before, obviously, as you might expect, because we tell the truth and she doesn't. Wendy Thomas said that lower class people, read black people, they basically live life by a different set of rules. And the reason that this was allowed to happen, Keith, tell the audience if I'm lying. The reason Wendy Thomas opined that this was allowed to happen is that the middle class and upper class has not built enough bridges to the lower class. And in order to keep situations like this from happening in the future, situations such as a mother leaving her 2-year-old and 3-year-old at home alone so they can set the house on fire, in order to keep this from happening in the future, people in the middle class and upper class, read white people, need to do more to bring blacks up to our standard of living. And then we wouldn't have to go through the agony of watching their relatives get on television and laugh that she's upset that her welfare card might have burned up with the two kids. Keith, am I making anything up about this?
No, I tell you, it's a caricature. The truth is stranger than fiction. It's just like you said, you can't make this stuff up. This is absolutely an article that exists in the Commercial Appeal. And again, the obvious guilt of these two women has been deflected onto the white population as a whole.
It's exactly right, Keith. Essentially, the white race, for lack of a better term, is responsible for these two black women leaving their toddlers at home where they caught themselves on fire and burned themselves alive. We are responsible for that? I don't think so.
Well, as Holly said in their little anthem back in the 60s, "He ain't heavy, he's my brother." Well, let me tell you, he's mighty heavy, and he ain't our brother. And this is not our responsibility. And, you know, I was just looking at the newspaper here. We were talking about that Shannon Christian and Christopher Newsom article about the killer, couple's killer gets the sentence of death. You know what the sub-headline is? "Jury shows no mercy for ex-Memphian in slayings." In other words, the ringleader of this was an ex-Memphian. And apparently, we're to feel bad that they gave him the death penalty. Heavens to Betsy, what in the way, after a brutal torture murder of two totally innocent people, picked at random, the fact that a jury in Knoxville, and I'm sure it had a multitude of blacks on it, because in the Batson case, this Supreme Court case, you can't exclude black people from the jury. In fact, you have to take great pains if you're a prosecutor to put them on. Somehow we're all to feel collective guilt because the jury showed no mercy by giving this guy the death penalty. Can you believe it?
Well, the death penalty, he'll die of old age before they ever inflict that.
Yeah, they'll have all these National Lawyer Guild type lawyers of filing one appeal after another, and I guarantee you, if he, like you said, he'll be an old man if he ever does get executed, and he'll probably be let go by some liberal judge at some point or another. But see, the whole point of this, the whole point of your conversation with Paul Gottfried and Richard Spencer is that because of this infliction of white guilt and this need for validation that apparently they've impressed upon so many white people, we fight the culture war with one hand tied behind our back, and then we wonder why we lose the culture war. What do you say, James?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Keith, and we're going to continue to lose until we do as I told us to do in the last segment. We got to say, listen, look, obviously our people have done wrong at points in our lives as individuals, collectively, you name it, but I think if you take the things that we have produced that are good and solid and that have benefited all of civilization.
All of mankind.
Listen, I'll take our track record over that of any other any day of the week. But the thing is, yeah, I'm not saying that we're perfect or that anyone is perfect, that any individual or group is perfect, but I'm not going to feel guilty about anything, and that's what we got to do. We got to stand up, take responsibility for when we are wrong, but certainly hold these perpetrators of cultural Marxism accountable when they are wrong, and it is a sin on their part to try to make us feel guilty to pick up the tab for the shortcomings of the rest of the world. And we've got to stand up and say in a collective voice, we're not going to take it anymore. Enough is enough. Our people are good. America was better in the 1950s than it is today. We're going to go back to the Constitution. We're going to stand up for our culture, for Christianity, for our people, for our founding stock, for our ancestors. We're not going to make you we're not going to allow you to make us feel guilty anymore. Because why? Because we're arrogant? No, because we were right and you were wrong and enough is enough. And, you know, by the way, we're going to clean out the media and take it back over. And we're going to reclaim all of our institutions and we're not going to be teaching this stuff.
We're not going to listen to any more baloney, any more Bravo Sierra from a bunch of liberal hypocrites who denounce segregation on one hand but live totally segregated lives, they, their families, and their children on the other, by sending their children to private exclusive schools and living in exclusive communities. You know, that's not going to cut it. We see the emperor. He has no clothes, and we're not afraid to be the child that speaks out and tells the emperor that he has no clothes.
The hypocrisy that they employ knows no bounds. Keith, we have less than a half minute remaining before we got to go to the break. We're going to come back, obviously, with a little bit of national news, and then I'll be back with you for the second hour tonight. A lot of good stuff forthcoming in the second hour. Keith, before you take off, I want to wish you a happy Halloween. Don't eat too much candy tonight.
Let me tell you one more thing before we leave, okay?
We got about 5 seconds.
Yeah, here's the situation. Remember MUS, Memphis University School, we mentioned the fact that they were defeating all these high-powered black schools and defeating them throughout the football season. They've now ended their regular football season undefeated.
And didn't get
all these teams. Well, if you look at the commercial appeal today, there's no article about MUS, about Memphis University School, about every other team there is, but it's been dropped down the memory hole like Orwell.
We'll see you next week, buddy.
Okay, buddy. Enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting,
hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the looms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.